But I love to fish. I spend all day out on this lake, and hell is all I catch. But today she met me at the door, said I would have to choose. And if I hit that fishing hole today, she'd be packing all her things and she'd be gone by noon. Well, I'm gonna miss her when I get home. Right now I'm on this lake shore, and I'm sitting in the sun. I'm sure it'll hit me when I walk through that door tonight. Yeah, I'm gonna miss her. Oh, looky there, I've got a bite.
Okay. Could resist. Go find that song and buy it. I mean, you know, go to wherever you buy songs from and buy that song. It's hilarious. That's a great
tune. Lucky I don't have that problem.
Yeah. No, I don't either. I'm, you know, it always surprises me when people have those kind of problems. I'm like, are you kidding me? Really?
Yep. You Mine know? Gets mad if I don't take her.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. But anyway, fun till the daddy takes T-Bird away. All right. Captain Kale in the chair across from me, Fish and Frank here, as you well suspected. You lucky little devils, you got us again. Now, so what's up, Captain Kale? What's been going on? You've been gone days and days.
Yeah. between boat shows and charters, I've been running for 2 weeks straight.
I get that. I got to tell you, by the time the boat shows were over, I was one tired puppy.
Yeah, last week, every day except Friday, I was on somebody else's boat. So it was a new boat every day.
Yeah, you know, in the concrete floors over there, here we've got mats behind the main counter. We got mats behind the rail counters.
We didn't have them at the boat show.
Oh, man, that concrete kills you. And then get on somebody else's boat. It's kind of the same thing, because every boat has a different tipping action, a different rocking action, and your leg muscles are always doing something different.
Yeah. And one of my clients, even, you know, I'm out there stumbling around, he's like, you're on boats every day of your life. How do you do this? I said, but I'm not on this one.
Yeah, it makes a big difference.
I'm used to my big party barge that doesn't move when six people run to the side.
Right, it's big, flat bottom, and all you got to do is you can have everybody on one side of the boat. They can all walk to the other side of the boat, and it really doesn't have any effect. And like
right.
Today, I'm going to be fishing out of a 15.5-foot skiff with my dad, and you got to be careful.
Yeah,
you can't. On my boat, I can stand up, I can jump up in the air, do a backflip and land on the gunwale, and it's not touching that boat.
Not
it
moving.
doesn't make a bit of difference. But on one of these, boy, you got to watch your step.
Yeah. It's goofy feeling. It's every day is different.
And it's the different muscles you use, because every boat rocks in its own pattern and every different type of hull. So your hips, your knees, and one thing people don't realize is how many commercial fishermen end their career with hip replacements. You know, because you're constantly rolling the boat with your hips.
Right. It's your hips, you know, your feet start as your first shock absorber. But when you're on a rolling boat, you end up using your whole leg.
Yeah, your hips are a big part of what goes on. I mean, you become Elvis after a little while, you know.
Exactly. Hunk, burning fish. When it's rough out, I go home and my quads hurt. The big muscles on the top of your legs.
I never knew what quads were. I'm like the least cool plant person on the planet.
They get sore because you're constantly moving them to.
Yeah.
With the waves as you're bouncing around out there. It actually, you get a good workout. It keeps the leg muscles in shape.
How many different, you were on what, six different boats in like 8 days?
Yeah.
So what happens? How does all that work?
it's normally educational trips. Whether it be harbor tours or fishing 101. We had some inshore fishing 101. We had some offshore fishing 101. or if they just want to use their boat and go fish, not so much learning, just want to catch fish.
Where to go and how to catch them in that spot.
Right. So Monday and Tuesday, I had a lot of fun. Same guys, same boat. And we went out Monday, and we went to three or four places, and we didn't do that good. And I think we come back with one big black drum, and that was really it. A couple catfish, a couple puffer fish, the usual suspects. And Tuesday morning, I showed up at his house. He actually kept one of Freedom's boat clubs overnight at his house.
Right.
And they, well, where are we going to go today? And we're going to go to the same places we went yesterday. Okay. Wait, what? Yeah, we're going to go to the same places yesterday. Well, we didn't catch anything yesterday. Yeah, today's a different day. And it went really, I mean, we've been preaching weather.
Exactly.
Pressure changes.
All the rest of that stuff.
All winter long. All winter long. And it was nice to go out there Tuesday.
What was the weather Monday?
The weather Monday was bright, sunny, and nice.
And what was the weather the next day?
Overcast, cooler, and a chance of rain.
Okay.
Now, normally you would think that the fishing's probably going to be better on the nicer day.
Okay.
Because you're going into that cloudy, overcast, cooler, rainy, so we're having a pressure drop.
Pre-front.
Right. And the fishing was just phenomenal on Tuesday, not on Monday. We went to the same places that we went, and we could do nothing wrong. They were jumping in the live well for us.
You just caught every fish you threw out at.
Yeah, yeah. We caught trout. We caught redfish. We caught snapper trolling out. We caught trout trolling out. We caught a couple juvenile snook on the troll. We did really, really well. Flounder. A pile of trout inside Alligator Creek, and they were all slot-sized trout.
Wow.
And it just really went to show you how those weather changes, you just don't know. We've been saying all year that throw your notebook away. We don't know what's going on this year. And that was a really good example. And I've been saying for a while now, fish those weather changes. And it really
right
drove
right before the change, yeah.
Well, that was the thing. It wasn't. It was on the day of the change.
Right before it hit.
Yeah, before the big stuff hit.
Right.
And it just goes to show that it actually works.
Yeah. No, it's all good. Yeah, I would have liked to have seen his expression when you said, well, we're going to the same place as yesterday. And he's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, all three of them stopped and looked at me.
Yeah. Be glad that plan worked.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Really be glad that plan worked.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's funny, but I've been sitting there fishing an island and had a little cloud come over. And a 30-second burst of rain, and had to change every rig on the thing, switch different bait, different rigs, everything, just because of a little change. The bigger the change is, sometimes more drastic everything changes.
Yep.
But, so, have you been out in your boat recently?
Friday was the only day that I went out on my boat.
And
so basically because I felt sorry for it. Been sitting there, it hadn't been used, it was looking kind of depressed. Friday we went out. Friday was horrible. It was windy. It was nasty. And it got worse as the day progressed.
Yeah.
We did catch fish. We caught a mess of trout out on the flats. I really wanted to get across to the west side and fish a little slot over there that I've been doing really well for sheephead and redfish. We just never got a chance to get over there. You took one look out there and said, nope.
Nope, so not doing it.
No, we went up into Poacher's Cut, up through PGI. That way I could come almost a straight shot with the waves from Ponce de Leon over to the beach complex. And we made it across in probably what were 4-foot, 5-foot waves out there in the harbor Friday afternoon. It was nasty.
And following seas or sideways or head-on?
We were following seas, luckily. And that's why I went through the Isles.
Right, because it would have been a nightmare trying to get around Mangrove Point there.
Right.
From Alligator Creek up to Ponce would have actually been a nightmare.
And I was really happy that I didn't risk it and go to the west side, because I'm sure the mouth of the Myakka would have been just nasty.
West wind?
Southwest.
Okay, what you would have ended up having to do is gone all the way up to the top end of the Myakka Cut up, No.
Or all the way up into
the top end of the Mica cutoff.
Come through the cutoff.
Come through the cutoff, yeah. And with that southwest wind, you would have been, that would have got you across the Mica. But getting from the Mica cutoff back over to the right. beach complex.
That would have been tough.
You've got to stay so far up on the bar that the waves break on the outside of the bar. And the only problem I ever had with it, I'm going along fine, but you literally have to go off the top of one wave to the next. Because if
right.
you let
and
yourself
you drop
get
down
in the trough,
into the trough, you hit bottom. You hit dirt.
Yeah, you're on the dirt, and then the boat stops, and the wave comes in, and
yep.
you're sunk.
Yep.
So it can be real tricky.
It
that
was
way.
Nasty coming out of Ponce. There were 4-foot waves crashing on the beach at Ponce.
I'm not sure I wouldn't have come all the way to Colony Point.
I debated it, but if I went to Colony, then I would have been cutting across into the waves.
Gotcha.
To an extent. So Ponce was definitely the better choice. I mean, we come across at 20, 22 mile an hour, didn't get a single drop of water in the boat.
It's all about learning to surf. What I tell
yep.
people...
Yep, absolutely. You steer the boat with your butt.
Is what you have to do is when you have like a 2-foot chop, a light moderate chop, a foot and a half, 2 foot, learn how to take your boat, stick the nose out in the air, and stay on the crest of the wave.
Yep.
And if you do it when the waves are small and practice that, whenever I'm coming back and forth across the harbor, I do a lot of practicing for rough weather. What I do is I learn to surf the boat. And
absolutely.
It's literally saved my life because one day I'm out there and I was in Mobile Bay working at the oil spill. And there was literally 6 to 8 foot seas and no way to get back outside of there. And everybody else is in 30, 34 foot boats. I'm in a 24. And because I had the ability to surf the waves, and just like being on a surfboard, I had the motor and the boat on the wave, the nose sticking out in open air.
Yeah.
And I would cut across, find a wave, and as it started to go down, I'd slam the throttle and crawl up the next one before the wave behind me would hit.
Yeah.
But I learned to do that on small waves. And learning to surf, learning to be able to keep your boat exactly where you want it on the waves really makes a big difference in that life and death situation.
Absolutely. I learned how to do it on big waves in the military.
Okay.
With the vehicles that I drove.
But you were driving, what were you driving in the military?
Amphibious assault vehicles. Big tanks that float.
Yeah, when you're driving a tank that but literally would rather be upside down or right side up.
Right, but the feel between that and the skiff is absolutely identical.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I can pretty much close my eyes and ride the waves in the skiff. By feel, because that's basically how you had to do it in these vehicles, because you don't have much to look out of.
No, you got a little tiny window.
Yeah, you got a little tiny window to look through.
Because otherwise people could shoot at you
right,
through it.
Right.
Yes.
So it's exactly the same feel as the military vehicles. And you get out there and you kind of feel it. You don't look, you don't watch, you just kind of feel what the boat's doing.
Well, take what he said, and the only thing disregard is you have to watch when you're learning.
Okay. Well, yeah, absolutely.
You have to pay a lot of attention to where the waves are, where the next wave is, and how you're going to get from the wave you're on till the next wave, because waves always break. They're always going to fall apart. The only time yep. they don't is like in the Atlantic where you get the big swells. You can stay right. with that wave a much longer time, but eventually you got to change waves.
Yeah.
And learning to go from one to the other is a big thing. But big difference between driving a large flat bottom thing and a V-hull.
Right,
when I'm
right.
doing a V-hull, I come into the waves, and I'll take it the wind and the wave head on
right.
and go through it. With a flat bottom boat, I've got a quarter of the wave. I can't go straight up it, because if you do, the wind will catch that big flat front end and take you over backwards. So you've got a quarter up the waves with that. It's a whole different ride than the V-hull.
Right.
And that was a big learning curve, because I hadn't been on a flat bottom. And then the first time, literally, I was the first day I was up there, we ended up in that 6-8 foot seas. And I came out of an inlet. And
that's the worst, coming out of an inlet.
And I took that first wave straight head on, just like I would my V-hull that I had been riding.
Right. And you said, oops, I'm doing it wrong.
Oh, yeah, the boat stood up. And, I mean, I was literally almost straight up and down. kill the, you know, hit the motors to neutral, let the wave kick the bottom of the boat back, let the front end start to fall, and as soon as it got almost down, slammed my left motor and took off at a quarter, then brought the right engine up and powered up over the top of it and caught the next ones, and then I was fine. I was going out into it. Boy, what a different feel that was.
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't have drove a stick pin up my spinker with a sledgehammer.
Probably not. You know what I mean? It's a weird feeling when you feel the nose of that skiff catch wind.
Yeah.
It really is.
But anyway, we've been talking about that. Let's go back onto the charter thing. How are you choosing where you go nowadays?
Well, when I'm on other people's boats, it really comes down to what the capabilities of their boat is. We've had some really, really low tides lately. So some of the boats I can get in behind the bar, some I can't. The bigger boats we've been staying in, of course, the deeper water. Alligator Creek, working the outsides of the bars, inside.
Now, how are you working the outside of the bar?
Either you're working the wind. If the wind's blowing out of the east, then you're going right up to the bar and letting it push the boat out to deeper water. Keep going till you quit getting hits. Then go back to the bar and start over. Vice versa, if the wind's out of the west, start in your deeper water, drift to where it's too shallow.
Now,
if you're drifting from deep to shallow, make sure you leave your engine all the way down. That way you can start it up, lift it up a little bit, and back out. If you lift it up, then your hull hits. Then you're stuck there till high tide or sea tow comes and gets you.
Or you get out and push.
And that water's too cold for me to get out and push.
So the big key, whichever way you're doing it, you're using the motor as your depth finder.
Right.
It's as you go up towards the bar with your motor in its lowest possible position, then as soon as it starts to bump, you stop and you throw your lines up towards the sandbar and let the wind drift you away. And if you're coming from the outside, the wind's blowing a little more out of the west or another direction, you're leaving your motor down, and that way your motor will hang, the front of the boat swings around, and very simple matter, reeling your lines up, tilting the motor a little bit, and backing out. Yep. It's why we don't use inboards here. It's why we don't use IOs, because neither one of them are very good at running while tilted.
No.
And you cannot tilt an inboard. It's right. Physical impossibility.
You're stuck where you're at.
Once you're bottom, you're bottom.
Right.
But with an IO, it's okay, and it is the only way you can really fish that bar with the IO. You just have to be very careful not to use too much throttle.
Yeah.
Because that knuckle joint does not like running when it's in its up position.
No.
It likes being down. Because you're going past your trim and getting into your tilt
right.
to get off of the bar, right. and that's where the problem lies. So you drift up, you cast your baits up. You're finding it better with floats, or you're free lining, or sinkers,
yep.
jig heads.
Yep. I start out every day, and it's because every day is so different than the last. Start out with a little bit of everything. Somebody throwing artificial, somebody throwing shrimp, somebody throwing shrimp under a bobber, somebody throwing shrimp with a split shot. See which one produces, and then switch. If one is obviously outproducing the other, switch.
Adapt and overcome this thing.
Yeah.
Do not let them right. set. Let them get set. Find what they want and feed them that way.
You have to. Yeah. Because every day is so different than the last. And it happens every day. I go out there one day, they want shrimp. The next day, they want artificial. The next day, they want popping corks.
So a lot of people right now, before all this cold weather hit, the white bait had been moving in pretty good. And
I think it still is. I'm seeing quite a few captains out there having white bait. Some of them are running all the way down to Placida area out towards Mount Lachey. Some of them are getting out there in the middle of the harbor if you get lucky. So they are starting to move in. Now, are they going to stay? That's the big question. It'll take one good cold front to push them all back out.
Right.
So I haven't put a whole lot of effort into it yet.
It's almost time, but not quite. It is January, right, for right. goodness sakes. And
it
January
is... With that being said, our water temperatures are still up.
Yeah. I mean, I was watching the Weather Channel, and the warmest 14 years on record since they've been keeping record worldwide,
yeah,
have been all since the year 2000.
Right.
So from 2001 to 2014 were the warmest years on record. And that's on a worldwide basis. Now, you take it city by city, town by town, whatever. It varies a lot state by state.
Sure.
But if you take the world as a whole, so...
Well, you can't push the whole global warming thing if somebody's been colder when everybody else has been warmer, so it's easier just to say the whole world's getting hot.
Yeah.
Well, that's the whole point of global warming.
Yes.
It's got to be global.
So, you know, we know... The climate's changing and changing rapidly. It could be natural. We could be doing it. Anybody could be doing it. But we're probably doing it. You know, I mean, I just saw a thing on India in one of their cities. And the air pollution, the guy's going, God, you can taste it here. I mean, literally taste the pollution in the air. That's bad. And what they found out in Los Angeles was putting the gas caps on tight. And whether it's a 5-gallon can or a boat tank or a car tank, it's a lot of it's caused from the evaporation of all that fuel sitting around.
I look at it from the shark fishing perspective.
Go ahead.
Protecting hammerhead here in Florida for the 3 months that they're here is ridiculous when you let the rest of the world rape and pillage them for the other 9 months they're not here.
Yeah.
It's no different with the air pollution. Putting all the restrictions on us isn't helping anything when you have places like India that have absolutely no pollution regulation.
But I've seen their air, I've seen ours. I'm going to go with them and say, okay, I'm going to accept some regulations. I just...
Sure, I mean, if you can taste it, there's a problem.
I put a down payment on a vehicle that gets 84 miles to the gallon. And it's a concept. Now, I can lose my down payment if they don't follow through with the company. But I've been following it for a little over 2 years now, watching it, and they finally got the motor together.
Yeah.
And after 2 years of looking at it, wondering, is this a scam or not a scam, I finally risk the down payment.
Yeah.
And so I actually, because gas price is cheap right now.
Sure.
But I remember back when Bush was president, gas went to $3.65, and when he was trying to get reelected or get another, you know, Republican in, gas went back down to $1.80. And it's funny because nobody in the gas industry admits it, but Obama took it up to $5 a gallon. And now that there's an election coming up, Obama can't, or it probably shouldn't go and rerun. I mean, he might try to rerun.
Funny how that works.
But now gas is $1.80 again, because look at what we've done.
Yeah.
I'm coincidental, but so that tells me sometime after the next election, we've got from now until the election hits of inexpensive gas.
Sure.
Once the election's over, you're going to see $3 to $5 a gallon again.
Probably.
Definitely. It's going to happen, you know, because what's happening right now is in Canada, the Dakotas, and all these places where they're taking out the gas with fracking and all this, they're getting so much gas. But it's actually cost them more to get it now than what they're making. That's only going to last so long. And Russia's got the sanctions on it now. So
right.
They're dumping gas out cheap to try and keep their economy going. And so everything's, this is only going, all these weird things are only going to go on until the election's over. We right. know that.
Well, so, then maybe after the election, the damn white bait will come in.
I would hope so. You know, I don't know why it is, but if the Republicans and Democrats would quit fighting, we would have more white bait.
Right.
You know, El Nino, the polar vortex, and the dang Democrats and Republicans, they're the reason right. we don't have right. white bait.
And we, need white, and we need white bait. Yeah. Not because we need it to fish with. But we need it to feed the fish we want to catch.
Now, I did have a guy walking the 41 Bridge tell me about a big school of bait fish he saw, and definitely small bait fish breaking the surface there.
Yeah.
I'm thinking threadfin.
It could be threadfins. It could be glass minnows. There's been some really big glass minnows rinsing out of the canals.
Really?
Yeah. So it could go either way. They could be small threadies. It could be big glass minnows. But I've definitely seen some bigger schools of bait fish out there. I haven't thrown the net on any of it yet.
Yeah, just make sure you do it with a 3-ace.
Right.
Yeah. A quarter inch mesh and a school of glass minnows
is,
will give you the prettiest looking Christmas
and
tree.
The bad thing.
I mean, if you do it around the holidays, it's fine because you can hang it in the yard and you got all the nice silver glittery fish coming out.
Now, the bad thing is if you throw that 3/8, what if it's dreadfin?
Yeah, but I'd rather pull 50 or 60 thread fins out than 3,000 glass minnows.
I've never seen to get 50 or 60 thread fins.
No.
No, it's 3,000.
Yeah, I've never had that kind of luck. But when I'm test throwing, I don't let it sink. I drop it, hit it,
sure,
it up.
Sure, I still get them.
Just to get a
it
sample.
It was so bad the last time I just tied the net off to the cleat and took off.
Yeah, well.
It was that bad.
Now, why did you tie the net off the cleat? Just try and rinse them out of the net?
Yeah, pulls them out. Sucks them out.
Gotcha.
Now, if you really want to do it right, you take that net and you throw it inside your live well and you leave it for 2 days. And then it'll get nice and mushy. And then tow it behind the boat. They all come right out. Just don't open the live well.
Oh, God. Folks, I'm not really going to recommend that pattern of cleaning a net, because now the maggots would kind of get that net a little clean for you. They'd start the process.
They come out
God.
So much nicer when they're mushy.
Yes. Oh, my God. The smell on that have to be horrible. All right. But anyway, getting back, we talked about fishing in the bars. Have you been out through the middle of the harbor at all?
I haven't been fishing it, but I've made enough trips across it to kind of get a good feel of what's out there. There's definitely some light bait out there somewhere. We're starting to see bluefish. We're starting to see jacks. We're starting to see Spanish mackerel out in the open water. They're not going to go out there if there's not something for them to feed on.
Right. They don't.
So
they come in, look around, and leave if there's no food.
Right. So they're staying. So obviously there's something out there for them to feed on. Big group of birds the other day when we came in from offshore in the 20-foot hole. Out there feeding on something later in the afternoon. My guess was it looked like threadfin.
Right.
It didn't look like small threadfin either. It looked like good-sized threadfins. So every bird in the harbor was out there diving.
Okay. So, I mean, that's always a good sign once you see the birds working. And
birds tell you everything.
Oh, I think they got the gauge fixed in Arcadia.
Oh, the river flow gauge.
Yeah, I was looking at it this morning. It just went up and dropped right off. And now there's a little equipment malfunction is what they're saying right now. Somebody ran into the thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, sorry. I was looking at equipment malfunction. I was hoping to get an update.
Our markers and stuff have been taking a beating lately.
Well, never. When you guys are going out, and you're leaving from Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda, going out to Boca Grande or going out to the Gulf, the channel markers are a nice guide. But look at the chart for just a couple of minutes. It's the exact same depth, a quarter mile on either side of the markers from marker 1, marker 2, marker 1, marker 5, all the way
around.
But
these are known markers that are getting hit.
But that's what I'm saying. Because
the one at Roberts Canal? Somebody hit that one. They just replaced the one at Ponce. Somebody whacked one at Pirate Harbor.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just because people think they have to run next to the marker to be safe. And it's the least safe thing in the harbor.
Yes.
If it was up to me, now, I would never want to see marker 1 go away because it holds too much fish. It's great structure.
Right.
But to be quite honest,
it's not necessary.
Let's take them out. Because they're the most dangerous thing out there.
Well, at least 1 and 2 are lit.
Right.
3 and 3A. Out in the upper harbor where most people do.
Oh, yeah. When I come home at night.
Fishing or traveling at night, you have to watch for 3 and 3A. They're out there in the middle of the upper harbor. No lights on them.
Yeah. And the one in front of Fishville is lit. So,
but right.
I set my GPS coordinates. When I'm going to make a turn to go out, I am at least an eighth or quarter mile away from a marker. I take an angle off and try and get my farthest point to make that turn. You know, you're going to break all those rods behind
you.
I
am going to.
I don't know, you know, we're going to move those to the other side because those are nice rods. Oh, we've got some brand new stars coming out with a brand new rod. And I have a prototype that you guys need to test.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, brand new prototype from Star. It is just feeling it, pretty amazing. Don't put it with that pile. Put them on the other side of the box, to the right. Those are my prototypes. So I have a prototype from Penn sitting on my desk, and it's been amazing. An amazing new Penn reel. I'm very happy.
It is a pretty cool little reel.
And so far, everything about it's been great. I'm going to be testing it a lot more here in the next few days. But just letting you know, there's going to be some pretty cool stuff. I don't think it'll be available for the tent sale. It's all prototype stuff. So right. Usually takes about a year from the time you get prototypes, yeah. A year to 2 years before they go into production, you start seeing them. But Penn's got a new reel coming out, and it's not going to be the reel you want, your first reel. But if you have a reel, it's going to be the reel, the next reel you want. It's going to be the best second reel that you can buy.
I agree.
I don't think it's not going to be your primary, but when you already have a rod and reel and you want your next one, this is going to be the reel to buy. Absolutely. It's going to be something I've been hoping for a long time. Great little dual drag.
Another product born out of Fish and Franks.
Yeah. There's been a lot of them over the years. Getting back, if you're coming down to Florida, and because we have a lot of listeners on the East Coast of Florida, thank you guys for listening. And, the West Coast, obviously, but East Coast of Florida, then all the way on up through the northern states, Canada, England, Australia, hello. Our Canadian listeners, man, you guys are great. The Minnesota people, Wisconsin, Michigan, all the way through Ohio, Pennsylvania, everybody, thank you. But if you're going to tow a boat down here, and you're going to come down, one of the things, have you noticed how people tend to leave their tackle up north? I don't get that. Well, it's freshwater tackle.
And the ones that bring it down here end up leaving it in a box in their attic because it's just not going to work. That's what they think. They think just because this is all freshwater stuff, it's not going to work.
Ridiculous.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Let's say you're moving to Florida. Do not sell anything outside of your boat up there. If you've got an IO boat or a cabin boat, get rid of it. Pontoon boat work great here.
Get rid of
aluminum
it.
Boats
get
work
rid of
great.
It up there.
Up there, yeah.
We're inundated with boats that don't work, RVs we don't need. All this stuff comes down here and everybody sells it because they don't need it. Sell it up there. You've got a better market.
You got a better market for it. Because it's a good boat for up there. But if you're coming down here and you've got an aluminum John boat, bring it.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you've got a center console with an outboard motor on it, bring it. If you've got an IO, an inboard, cabin cruiser, and you're moving to the Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda area, don't bring it down here. Now, if you're moving to Englewood on the coast, the cabin cruiser works fine.
Right.
Even the IOs and
all
the rest of that stuff. That's all good out there, but they're no good here in Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda. We have to be able to, tilt the motor. Part of this whole, I get this almost every morning. I have to eat in the mornings being diabetic.
Sure.
And so I'm learning to cook and do all this other stuff more so. I used to be an actual cook and chef and all that. But now I'm having to retrain myself because I've been living with Terry for 30 years. You know, it's now it. Some mornings I experiment. Today was an experimental morning.
Experiment's not going so well.
I'm reliving that. but your rods, your reels, your lures, good rods, good reels, or good rods, good reels?
Even if they're not good rods and reels.
You already own them.
Bring them down here. Use them until they blow up.
And the other thing it will do is give you an idea of what you do want.
Right.
Now you're coming down here and you're trying to guess at what kind of tackle you really want.
Most of your lures and stuff are going to work down here.
The only lure that doesn't is an Eerie Deary, and I got no idea why. I love an Eerie Deary.
I'm going to have some sent down.
I can get them.
I think I
stocked them for a long time.
I think they're going to be a good mackerel lure, and I really think if we would use them offshore, why would it not work for grouper?
It would work for a lot of things, I think. But if you could catch some of those big glass minnows and put it on the hook on that Eerie Deary.
Yeah. Oh, God, yes.
But to be quite honest, I've trolled it, I've cast it, I've done all things with an Eerie Deary. I can't get it to work.
I'm going to have to try it.
I can use a jitterbug out here and catch fish with it.
Yes.
I get a customer who catches snook on them all the time. I can't do it. I can't get it to work. I can catch any bass in the world on a jitterbug.
We were towing the other day an old bass crankbait, the ones with the fat head and
the big
short
bubble
little
ones.
Body
yep.
And the big metal
lip on it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is my Jack lure. okay. No, the Jacks love this thing. Whatever, throw it out there, man. You couldn't keep the Jacks off of that thing. We had to stop every house inside PGI to reel in a Jack.
Yeah.
Bang, 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 bang. I had the Storm Twitch stick out there not catching nothing, and this guy was just hauling them in left and right with that old bass plug.
Well, I can tell you, those Hedden makes a great one. And it's Bomber, the B or something like that or whatever. I can't remember the name of it.
This was like an old wiggle wart.
Right, like a wiggle wart. That's exactly what I'm talking about. It's kind of almost looks like a round
head. Yeah, a big bulbous head, a nice little short tail, comes to a
little
looks like
point.
It looks like a water droplet.
Yeah.
Almost.
And it's got a big lip on it, and the trick is getting one that doesn't go too deep. You don't want it to dive more than five, six feet. Trolling it, it'll keep it up a little bit. But they work great. I mean, Ralph came down using a large one of those around the bridge and outfished me on snook with my minnow bait. They don't see them.
They feel them.
They don't, but I mean, they don't see them very often. It's something new. It's something different. Something annoying, maybe.
Yeah.
Don't know what it is, but everybody uses the minnow styles. That's what we're used to. It's what they see all the time.
Sure.
And I think it's why rattle traps are becoming so popular right now. Because for 10 years,
nothing.
You didn't see anybody using a rattle trap.
No.
They were just.
All we did was clean packages.
Now. So many people have found out it's a great lure, and the fish aren't used to them. It's still new. It's still brand new. And Wes from Rattle Traps will be here, and he's got some new lures coming out. He's going to throw the Fish and Frank's exclusive Twitch and Trap in the tank, too, so you can see how that works.
I really hope he brings lots of those big gold and black ones. Those are my favorite. The big 1 ounce.
Yeah.
Trolling those things for tarpon are just phenomenal.
Yeah, just make sure you pinch the barbs down, boys and girls.
Yep.
Yeah, because you don't want a lure with two treble hooks and barbs on it while you're handling 150-pound fish.
Yeah, especially a tarpon. And the nice thing about pinching the barbs down is if you fish the bombers, chances are he only gets one hook in his mouth. He's going to eat that whole rattle trap. He's going to have that whole thing stuck in his mouth sideways. Nice thing is you don't lose them as much, but you don't have anywhere to reach in and grab them because it's all treble hooks inside his lips.
Right, and the thing is, if you get stuck by a treble hook when you've pinched down the barb, it comes right back out. If you've got a barb in there, now you're attached to a 150-pound fish.
When you are attached to a fish, I had a 17MR in my hand with a ladyfish on it, and it was not fun.
No.
Because you're trying to grab a fish you can't grab while it's flopping around, driving the hook deeper and deeper. Now, imagine doing that with a 150-pound ladyfish.
Yeah, so I'm on your side, man. Pinch those barbs down, and because you count it by jumps, count hookups, and count jumps, and count the way when you actually land the fish, and those are the three
ways. It's the only fish that doesn't count, or that counts when you don't land it.
Well, I count
the only fish. Oh, we got 17 jumps today. You mean you didn't catch anything? No, we got 17 jumps.
But see, I'm like that because I like them to jump and do the big old tarpon thing.
But does it count if a trout does that? No.
To me, it does.
Does it count if a snook does that?
To me, it does.
No.
To me, it does.
We jumped 17 tarpon today. You mean you went out there and didn't catch anything?
I've actually gone out and with a Hedden torpedo and one of my favorite topwaters for trout because it's just a lot of fun. With the treble hooks on, learning the timing to not allow them to take it. I've got like 16 hits in one cast and did not allow one of the trout to hit it. And
it is fun doing that.
Because, you know, you cast it out and you're working it and you see them as they're going to pop it and snatch it away from them. And I got 16 hits on one cast and did not allow a fish to hook up. I know that sounds ridiculous, but when you try it.
No, I've done it too. I've done it with topwater baits and redfish. Take the hooks right off.
I don't even bother because then it's no fair.
Oh, it is.
Because they can't hook up to it.
Right. That's the fun part. Have you ever visually seen a redfish get angry at the world?
Yeah.
You've got to do that to watch a redfish get angry at the world and watch the demeanor in that fish change. He gets angry. He starts tail slapping. He gets just downright irate. And it is fun to watch.
I enjoy doing that stuff.
Why does this thing keep jumping out of my lips? It is a blast to watch.
Yeah, I tell you, I know. It kind of goes back to what we were saying. When you come down here and you're bringing your rods and reels, if you don't know what you're coming out to fish, you're learning everything new. You've been doing what you've been doing for years. You already have lures you're good with. Bring the lures that you're good with. Good techniques
you
are
know
good
how to
techniques.
Run them.
Good lures are good lures.
You
no
know
matter where in the
them.
World I go, I always take my same stuff.
If you're not used to the 17MR, the Zara Spook, or some of the other lures that we use down here, you're starting from scratch again. Try your lures that you actually know how to run.
Right. Why learn new water and new lures?
Right. Take your time.
Yeah. I mean, if you're moving here, even if you're coming to visit, bring this, and especially when you're coming to visit, bring the rod you're good with, bring the reel you're good with, bring the lures, and we'll help you teach you how to tie a leader on to make it so you can land the fish.
Right.
But the rest of it, it's all good. I mean, when I go somewhere, I hate having to learn a whole new body of water, plus all new tackle and all new lures. That's
right.
A lot for anybody.
Right.
And the hardest thing in the world is to get people to remember they already know how to fish. That is
absolutely
the most difficult thing in the world.
And I had a guy out the other day that was exactly like that. Fishing all of his life up north, down here, you would have thought it was the first day he picked up a rod. What are you doing? You've been doing this for years. You've been doing this longer than me.
Right.
You're not starting over. You think you are. You're acting like you are, but you're not. Fish. Fish the way you know how.
Because every few years we come up with this new thing that works and it catches all these fish. But the banana jig, crazy jig, silly jig.
Sure.
Walleye jig, for God's sakes. That was invented to catch walleye.
Right.
It was never intended to come down here and use for saltwater. Now, it's great in the saltwater.
We used them for walleye up north.
Right. So
tip them with a night crawler and walk them down those rock shelves.
Yeah.
They were great for walleye.
But now it's a pompano jig or a trout jig or whatever you want to throw for it. But, I mean, they work great. But the reason we're explaining that is so you know, bring your stuff with you. Now, one part of me kind of likes it if you don't bring anything with you because I'm going to sell you more stuff. But the reality of it is you don't need to buy everything new. And it's best when you first get here not to.
Right.
Because you don't know what you want anyway.
Right. Do you want to fish offshore? Do you want to fish inshore?
Do you like a light action rod, a heavy action rod? You know, if you use what you've got, then you say, you know what, this rod's a little too light. It's not helping me land the fish. Then you bring that rod in, we go, okay, yeah, I got what you mean.
Yep.
Now here, this will fix that problem. Use this rod, this reel, and you're going to fix that problem. I had a guy came in who was rigged up at a place in Fort Myers, and it was god-awful. I mean, I spent a lot of time with him because he went to a place and they did the worst mix match of stuff I've ever seen. I mean, it was horrible. And he had a great rod and a great reel, but they in nowhere in the planet did they belong together.
Right.
A 6,500 pin spin fisher?
Sure.
For snook fishing on the mangroves.
That's a little extreme.
I mean, are you kidding me? With a 10 to 20 pound class rod.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, what idiot.
You couldn't have been more mismatched.
No. I mean, it was just, I feel so bad for people. And really what we're trying to do is get you to understand, mostly, if you've got a setup, it probably works. But it will allow you time to learn what you do want to fish with.
Yeah.
And
definitely
what you're going to need to do it properly here. Rather than coming down, and most of the time you're going to buy something similar to what you had anyway, because that's what you were used to.
Right.
Bring what you have. If it doesn't work out, we'll help you enhance the fishing with a different rod and reel. But if what you have works great, why are you going to change it?
Right. And we're not going to force you to.
And if it's not saltwater,
buy something you don't need.
What's the difference if it's not saltwater? If you moved here, use it till it wears out.
Right.
What do you do?
Absolutely.
Sell it at a garage sale for a couple of bucks?
Yeah.
So if it lasts 6 months or a year or 2 years, you still got to get it. It was great.
Yeah, a lot of your rods and reels will still have plenty of life down here.
Oh, yeah.
As long as you take care of them, just because it's not saltwater rated, it doesn't mean anything. As long as you take care of it.
Neither does a saltwater rating, but
no, it doesn't.
And I know that good reels are good reels. You can take a good freshwater reel built with good materials.
Yes.
And it's going to last just as long as a saltwater reel is, because the only difference between a saltwater reel and a freshwater reel is the materials it's made out of.
Yeah. Period. Sometimes you get sealed bearings, but those bearings aren't sealed enough to keep water out. No. So,
and I don't even want sealed bearings.
No, I don't either.
I want to be able to put oil in them.
Right, exactly.
I want to oil the bearings, so I don't want sealed bearings. Lightly sealed is nice, keeps the bigger chunks out.
Right, keeps the sand and the salt and the big gummy parts out.
So I can clean it and rinse it. But anyway, Captain Kale, he does fishing charters on his boat. You can hire him to go out, and Kale's just about to come into his time because, you know, everybody has their thing.
Everybody, and I am probably the most excited person to see bluefish, Spanish mackerel, and jacks out in the harbor.
Because
it means one thing. and the shark are coming.
The sharks are coming. And Kale's are, Kale loves shark fishing. And during shark season, he is booked a lot because Kale's very good at finding sharks. And you start, and the cool thing I like is starting out with the small ones and then going in to catch the big ones. Because if you've never shark fished, to actually get to hold a shark in your hands and feel it and understand how the skin works and the aerodynamics of it and just everything about it.
Everybody thinks the skin is cool. But what really blows their mind is when they've got a hold of that shark and it starts to wiggle a little bit. Because you don't realize how strong of an animal that is. You know, I don't allow sharks over 4 feet in the boat.
No, it's too dangerous.
It's too dangerous for the shark. It's too dangerous to the clients. But even putting those 3-footers and the 4-footers on the deck,
yeah,
you know, they're a handful. If you're not ready, and I tell everybody, listen, I'm getting ready to let go. You are not ready. Oh, yeah, I am. No, you're not. You've never felt this before. You don't realize how strong these animals are.
Yeah, they're just solid muscle, and they swim 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
Literally, now some sharks shut off half their brain, like people on I-75.
Right.
Other sharks can shut off their entire brain and just swim and breathe on an additional part of their brain stem.
Right.
But a lot of them shut one half off and sleep that side, and then shut the other half off and sleep that side. But they always move, with the exception of bull sharks, lemons, a few nurse shark stuff like that. But otherwise, if you move 7 days a week, that's one heck of an aerobics program.
Right.
For a creature that's solid muscle.
Yeah. It's something that you're not ready for ever.
Starting off with the little ones, holding them, getting up close and personal with them, and then going to catch the big ones.
Right.
And feeling something that literally is stronger than you on the end of the line.
And I love the polar opposite that sharks are from tarpon. When you get a tarpon to the side of the boat, everybody comes to the side of the boat and looks.
Right.
When you have a shark to the side of the boat, everybody comes to the side of the boat and then takes 3 steps back.
Because it could eat you.
Yeah. And that's why I like it so much more than I like tarpon fishing. I came down here with the delusions of grandeur, tarpon like everybody else. And then once you start seeing tarpon eaten by sharks, I'm sorry, that's not the trophy anymore.
No.
If your trophy fish is eaten by something, that something is now the trophy.
Exactly. And so it's an amazing thing. And you're about ready to get into your big shark season. Everything's coming up.
Yep, we're getting the shark gear out, cleaning it up, re-spooling line, getting it ready.
So, anyway, but we're going to wrap up this section of radio fishing with Captain Kale here. And, Kale, what's your phone number?
941-916-4538.
941-916-4538.
4538.
Got that. And click the little logo, Bad Fish Charters, right next to this. It'll take you right to Kale's website. And have fun fishing sharks. And well, this is Fishing Frank in the chair, Captain Kale across from me. And thanks, guys, so much for listening to another Radio Fishing. And all 16,000 of you now, we're back up. We had dropped down when I was sick and couldn't keep up with the shows and everything else. We had dropped down to about 8,000 listeners.
Our attendance kind of fell off.
We're back up. We're just pushing 16,000 listeners again. Wow. And boy, we can't thank you guys enough for putting up with us. We have a ball doing this, and we appreciate it. We'll see you
next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday,
we have got to sit down and talk.
Okay.
About Monday's charter.
All right.
We're gonna have 10 Amish guys out there fishing.
10 Amish guys.
10 fishing. Amish guys on two boats out there fishing.
Okay. Yeah. I think that'll be noteworthy.
I hope they don't make me turn my fish finder off.
Okay. I don't get the whole Amish thing, but we'll talk about it a week from tomorrow, right?
Definitely. Definitely.
A week from tomorrow.
I got a feeling this one's going to be an adventure.
Yeah. 10 Amish guys. That's the first time I've ever heard of that, but we'll have to see how they are. I mean, I've known a lot of Amish because I grew up in an area with horse and buggies and all that. I mean, I had Amish friends as a kid.
Sure, so, I did too.
You know, I'm going to, and like you say, the thought of them coming to Florida and then going out on a fishing charter.
I was going to change the name of the boat just for the charter.
Okay.
What do they call the taxis in Amish country?
Go ahead.
Yoder toters.
Yoder toters.
Yeah. Yoder is a very popular Amish last name. And that's what they call the taxis, Yoder toters. Gotcha. And that's what I was going to rename the skiff for the day.
God, I feel like I got Josh Olive on the show. Can we get more politically incorrect than this? Yes, we could. I don't need to go there. All right, a week from tomorrow, we'll...
I figured they'd get a laugh out of it.
Most of them have a great sense of humor.
Oh, yeah.
So, we'll see how yours run. God. All right, Yoder Toter. That is Captain Kale over there. And we will catch you guys on the next Radio Fishing. Thanks much for listening.